My name is Nicole Kidman, and I've wanted to do a rom-com for so long, and along came A Family Affair. It's a great romantic comedy, and it's laugh out loud. If you feel like, I just need to curl up and watch something that feels very comforting, it's the Netflix experience. There's laughter and there's joy. That's A Family Affair.
A Family Affair, starring Nicole Kidman, Zac Efron, and Joey King. Directed by Richard LeGravenais. Rated PG-13. Sexual content, partial nudity, and some strong language. Only on Netflix, June 28th.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Welcome to another episode of No Script, No Problem on Believe, the number one podcast network for professionals. Coming up on the show, I'll talk to writer and reporter Emily Bix of Heavy Sports about the Harrison Butker controversy. The kicker spoke at the Benedictine College commencement and has ruffled quite a few feathers. Plus, we'll talk about Scottie Scheffler's arrest at the PGA Championship and Netflix's big move with the NFL. But first, I've got an interview with Jeff Hassler, executive producer on the new Netflix documentary, Rather, about legendary journalist Dan Rather's landmark career in news. The feature documentary utilizes the story of Dan Rather's life on television to explore the evolution of broadcast journalism, the troubles a free press now faces, along with the slide of American society from hard-fought advances in social justice and democratic freedoms. A little bit about Jeff. He is the president of Original Productions, which is owned by Fremantle. Jeff oversees all development, production, business, and strategic aspects of Original. Jeff is a two-time Primetime Emmy nominee, and he is the executive producer of Deadliest Catch, Mud Madness, Storage Wars, Race to Survive, and Waco, American Apocalypse. Plus, as I mentioned, Rather. We cover a lot of ground in this interview, so enjoy. Okay, Jeff Hassler, welcome to No Script, No Problem.
Hello, how you doing, Steve?
I am wonderful. I'm psyched to talk to you, my friend. You have had an incredible career, president of Original Productions. You got a great documentary yes. that is streaming right now on Netflix called Rather, about the one, the only iconic anchor, one of the greatest newsmen ever, Dan Rather. I mean, talk to me about how you were able to convince Dan Rather to do a documentary.
You know, it's funny because there's a line, there's a little section in the documentary where they talk about, Andy Cohen talks about, like, it was the age of the anchorman. It was Rather, Jennings, and Brokaw. And then another person talks about how they used to reach 45 million people every night, right? And we forget, like, they were revered, right? They were the trusted names, right? And everybody got their news from there. And so it's a great story. I think Dan, as he was kind of looking back on his life, you know, he had this whole new resurgence on social media, right? His Twitter followers are huge. He reached Gen Z and millennials, this whole new generation who kind of looked to him to be this voice of independent truth in the face of kind of all the misinformation or the doubt about news and fake news and all that stuff. And when we got introduced to him, he was totally up for it. It kind of came from Dan, like he was open to it. And a couple of our executive producers introduced us. And here's the best thing, because he's such a journalist with so much integrity, he was like, I'm not going to be involved. He was like, All I ask is that you let me take a look at the final film just to make sure dates and names are correct. He said, everything else you can talk about, warts and all. So like we talk about him leaving and the Killian papers. We do less on the actual who's right, who's wrong, because if you want to dive into that rabbit hole, you can go on Google and find all that. And more about the person. And here's this guy at the top of his career, and he has to make this decision to like leave his dream job. And it's kind of like a phoenix rising from the ashes moment when he comes back, you know, on HDNet. So he was great, and he spoke eloquently, he spoke passionately, and I learned so much about Dan Rather. You can tell, obviously, I am like prattling on, but like I thought I knew him, but like I didn't know things like how deep his faith was. Like he reads his Bible every day, that he loved, like his daughter has this line about how he is like old school patriot. And he tried to join the Marines, but when he was a teenager, but he had rheumatic fever when he was younger, and he got disqualified. And so the way he felt he could serve his country was by being a journalist who always sought the truth. So anyway, it's a film that is doing pretty well. You know, you never really get the streamers never really share a lot of their results, but from what we hear from them, it's doing really well. And I think part of that is because it's so timely. With the election, with, you know, all these themes kind of still being out there, and then a whole new generation of people looking to him to kind of help guide them through this process. So I appreciate your enthusiasm, man. We're super excited about it.
Directed by Frank Marshall. I think for a refresher for any of our listeners/viewers, so we're talking about Dan Rather, 6 decades in the news business, okay? And just, you know, I think for me watching it, you do forget. It's pretty easy in our 24/7 now, 24/7 news cycle to, it's easy to forget just how much that Dan Rather covered, okay? He was literally covering on the ground President Kennedy's assassination, okay? That's like insane that he was there as a young reporter. That he got punched, right, at the 1968 Democratic National Convention. Insane. Yeah. Insane. Yeah. Okay? Then he's like...
Insane.
Yeah, he's like at Tiananmen Square with the protesters. That was one of the coolest scenes. Is he sitting there like you guys are like he's like filming and like China had to shut him down. Like the government has to shut him down. He's like covering the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
He's in Vietnam. And then you have like you said, you know, you had these controversies with the Killian documents, with the investigation into George W. Bush. And his, you know, his controversy, the controversy around him. And that was such a big deal. And this is something I did not know, you know, maybe it was just, you know, I was very young, but his battle with the first President Bush before in 80, I think it was the 88 election going toe to toe. That was a kind of an eye opener with all of his accolades with such a long career. How did you guys go about kind of picking, choosing, finding an arc to the story you wanted to tell in just, you know, 90 minutes to 2 hours?
That's a great question. And that was really the challenge of the film. And I think Frank was so successful at. This was one of those projects where you're kind of like, wait, can it really be this much good, fun cooperation? You know, from Wavelength, you know, Jennifer Westfall and Joe Plummer, who funded the film and came on very, very early. You know, we decided early on to make this like an indie film, a true indie film. To Ethan Goldman, who's another one of our executive producers who's been on from the beginning, to Frank Marshall coming on. Like, we all really wanted to respect Dan's legacy. Warts and all, right? Warts and all. Because just, and look, the things that aren't in the film, Martin Luther King, 9/11, you know, Berlin Wall, there's a little clip, you know, like his life, his career is basically like the modern era, the post-World War II America. If it happened, he was there, right? You know, for the 20th century, for the back half of the 20th century, he was there. And so the challenge was, how do we pick? What do we pick? And where we ended up was focusing on moments where either his reporting changed journalism, his reporting, like with the feud with the, with George Bush, you know, how that sort of, and Roger Ailes was part of that, right? And so how that kind of changed culture, or moments that kind of changed him personally. And so, for instance, you referenced the Kennedy assassination. You know, that was a moment where culture shifted, and Americans, you know, because he was there, he was based in Texas, he was the Texas bureau chief, he was on the ground every day, every night, coming into people's living rooms. That was a moment when news changed, and more Americans got their news from television than they did on the newspapers, because the newspapers, right, had to like report yesterday's news, and Dan was telling you up to the minute stuff. He was there when Oswald got shot, right? Versus 9/11, you know, very, very, very important event in American, in global history, but Dan's reporting didn't necessarily push journalism forward then, right? He still did his amazing, wonderful job. So that was kind of how we picked and choose those things. Vietnam, you know, he was one of the people who sort of pushed the narrative of everything you're being told about Vietnam is not necessarily what's true. You know, he got there and he discovered that, like, oh, we're not winning this war. And it is mostly being fought by, like, you know, economically disadvantaged kids or kids of color. And he started kind of bringing that truth home. So as you watch the film, you'll kind of see, like, these were seminal moments either in culture, in Dan's life, or in the film. There's one of my favorite pieces of archive is in, and it's a little moment, it's in Vietnam, and he's doing his Dan Rather thing. He's like laying on the ground and like bullets are whizzing over his head. And in the background, there are two medics working on a wounded soldier. And you hear one of the medics say, like, you know, hey, we need some help over here. And there's like this little silent pause because people are busy fighting the war. And then you hear Dan say, I'll help you. And he like crawls out into the middle of the fray and like holds the IV, or he's holding onto a bandage that they're bandaging this guy with. And he helps him make a stretcher. And that's just who he was. There's a great still I love too. One of my favorite stills I love of Dan with a camera person sitting on his shoulders and Dan standing up, getting the person up over the crowd to shoot. And the guy, he whatever it took to get to the truth, to get to a story, he was going to do it.
I know you mentioned that 9/11 wasn't like, you know, he didn't have this massive impact on it, but I will give you a personal anecdote about why I feel for me personally, he was important for 9/11. So at the time, you know, we all remember exactly where we were. So I was a young news person, actually I was sports, but still working at a local TV station in West Virginia, in Morgantown, right? So about an hour, a little over an hour south of Somerset, Pennsylvania, where Flight 93 crashed.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. I was living at the time, I will skip through some of these personal ridiculousnesses, but my girlfriend at the time was a news reporter. Yes, she was a news reporter. I was a sports reporter. I was very young, Jeff. It was very early in the morning, and I distinctly remember phones kept ringing. We had worked the 11 o'clock the night before. Why are people calling us over and over again at 9:30 and 9:45? And she gets out of bed, turns the TV on, and whose voice do I hear at 9:45? It's Dan Rather. And the first thought was, why is Dan Rather on at 9:45 in the morning? And it was like hearing his voice, I knew something was wrong. Something had happened. And it's something I never will forget. Hearing his voice and hearing a gasp in the other room of her gasping at the sight of the Twin Towers. And then me running in and knowing, you know, nothing would ever be the same. Mm-hmm. And then she ended up going to the crash site of Flight 93 and reporting live. And we were at a CBS affiliate. So Dan was on all day and then she would cut in now and then. Yeah. So it's just like watching him pretty much all day on 9/11, even though, you know, he was not, you know, as you said, he was not, you know, it was not something that maybe he was as impactful from a historic standpoint. For me personally, I will never forget Dan Rather on 9/11.
So funny you say that. I don't know if you remember this in the film. Douglas Brinkley, if you don't know Douglas Brinkley, people who are listening, he's a historian. And he has this line, I'm going to paraphrase it because I don't remember it exactly. But he says, but I do remember this part. He says, you know, Dan Rather, you know, at times was sort of like rabbi and priest and doctor and this. It's like, you know, and he just talks about this comforting. And Andy Cohen, so Andy Cohen was Dan Rather's intern, as you saw in the film, right? And he does this great Dan Rather impersonation. But Andy Cohen had a line that just unfortunately we couldn't fit in, where he said that like Dan Rather is like everybody's grandfather and we just wanted to look at us and tell us everything's going to be okay, right? Like he had those guys, Walter Cronkite before him, Jennings and Brokaw, they had these ways of like, you just were like, all right, okay, I, you know, we're going to get, you know, you're going to tell me what's what and I'm going to kind of go with it. There was that trust, right? I really hope people will watch it because whether you're on the right or whether you're on the left, it's not a political film. Frank worked really, really, really hard to make it not a political film. It's a film about a guy looking for the truth. And you mentioned that thing about getting punched in the at the 1968 convention. So that's probably my second favorite piece of archive. And this is a long scene. I don't want to spoil it for people. But again, it just kind of goes to show you what Dan was up for, like to get a story, right? There's another journalist, Dana Roberts, who worked with Dan for several years, talks about, you know, politicians are there to deliver their message and the media is there to tell you if it should be believed or not. And I think that's why I think people on both sides of the political spectrum will like the film. I mean, we all know that it's very out in the open that like on the right side of politics, they think of Dan as like the devil. But I think, you know, there are probably just as many people on the left who are also like, he would be just as tough on the left as he was on the right. So I think it's a really interesting, timely film. And the biggest surprise for me has been the people under the age of 40 who I've talked to, who've seen the film, who are kind of blown away by the historical context it gives them. Like we were talking about like George Bush I, or somebody at a screening said to me like, I heard of Jesse Helms and I knew what he was about, but until I saw it, I had no idea what it really was. And so I think, again, like in the way that Dan has reached this new audience, the film hopefully can bring a new audience in to kind of think about journalism in a different way.
You had mentioned the kind of team effort that brought the film together. Wavelength, Anchor, Original Productions, your company, and then Frank Marshall, the director, and then the talent, Dan Rather. That is truly, you know, a force of nature. It took a force of nature to bring this film home and then to find a home like Netflix. You know, you mm-hmm. and I both know, and I've talked about it on the podcast before, that we are in a very challenging environment in entertainment today. Can you talk a little bit about how tough it was to get the film made and then to find a home, which, you know, I think everybody wants their documentary on Netflix. So how tough was it just to get it made and then to get it on Netflix?
So I met Dan in late 2018 and it dropped on Netflix, you know, a few weeks ago. And it's interesting, you know, we, like a lot of us who do this, you know, we would talk to our friends who are at networks and things and just like, oh, what are you working on? Oh, we're developing this, we're developing that. Not necessarily a full-on pitch. And two or three people that I'm friendly with at networks said to me, like, you know, that sounds like, that's a really cool idea. That's fun. It sounds like something that we would probably buy after a festival run rather than fund. And I sort of took that to heart and didn't want to, we kind of took that to heart and didn't want to kind of blow our chances, right? And so that's where how we met Wavelength, who, if you're not familiar with the amazing Jennifer Westfall and Joe Plummer, they have been involved in so many Oscar-winning films and so many to name, but, you know, go to the website, look them up, you know, Athlete A and one of my favorite films by Morgan Neville, Won't You Be My Neighbor, and Icarus, and, you know, just so many, 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 many films, amazing films. And they just got it right away and came on board. They were literally the first company we went to for private funding. It was really like a great partnership. And Ethan was on board, obviously, at that point as well. I've known Ethan for years. So it's kind of like you had these trusted partners, and then we approached Frank to come on, and he was really excited to do that. He was just kind of coming off of, I believe, the Bee Gees film at that time. It's very rare in your career that you get to make a film about an icon. And occasionally you get to make a film with an icon, about an icon, right? Because Frank's career is just unbelievable. And I think I couldn't be happier with the way Frank, the way he played with time. It's not a linear story, you know, he kind of goes at things thematically, and, you know, it's not a cradle to grave thing. It's not a chronological event thing. He just takes you through Dan's life with these themes, and there's a humanity to Dan that I think, you know, goes behind the mask. So it just was this passionate group of people who for 4 years fought through a pandemic. There are certain interviews you'll see in the film that you can kind of tell where, like, we had like sent the, does everybody remember that when you send the box out to people and stuff like that, you know, but we made it through a pandemic, out of a pandemic. There were just, but again, it was just, we all believed in this film so much. It's about an important person and an important topic in our time. I made a film when I was at Nat Geo with Brett Morgan about Jane Goodall. I didn't make it. Brett made it. I got to executive produce it. And that's another one where, and you know, I'm very indebted to Tim Pastor and Courtney Monroe, who were at Nat Geo at that time. It's one another one like this where I, you know, you get to make a movie about Jane Goodall with Brett Morgan directly. Right. Come on. Like, how often does that stuff get to happen to you? So I feel very lucky to have had a few associations like that in my life where I've made some really fun films in addition to like great TV shows and things that I'm just as proud of. But I don't know. It's just different when you're making a film about Dan or Jane Goodall.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Listen up, people. Over the years, I've learned how important hydration is in my workouts and everyday life. It's the key to helping my body move, recover, and just have a good time when I'm exercising and staying active. Things go even better when I'm well hydrated before I even start moving. Noon Hydration doesn't want you to wait to hydrate. They want you to start hydrated. Noon Sport Hydration Tablets hydrate better than water alone. Just drop them in your water, dissolve, and enjoy. They contain 5 essential electrolytes and come in crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade, lemon lime, and many more. They also have non-GMO vegan and gluten-free ingredients and only 1 gram of sugar. Noon hydrates you so you can do more, go further, and recover faster. And that means you can have a heck of a lot more fun. Since hydrated humans have the most fun, head over to shop now on noonlife.com and pick some up today so you're ready for anything, because anything can happen after noon.
Or, you know, that kind of stuff.
What I do want to, I want to pivot, and I want to talk a little bit about some of the challenges that are going on in our industry, in entertainment, how original productions and how you guys are adjusting. Paramount Global, you know, who's going to buy them? Sony and Apollo, are they going to buy them and then break up, sell off the TV assets, or is Skydance going to come in? You know, and then you have all these bundles, Warner Brothers Discovery bundling with Disney Plus and Hulu, or what was it yesterday? It was like Peacock is going to bundle with Warner Brothers Discovery and Netflix. And then today we had Venu Sports was announced. So how do you, as a production company, do you guys just try and focus on, hey, we've got our slate, let's just make it? Or is there more? Do you guys look bigger at the landscape and try and really take into consideration who are these buyers and let's tailor our programming towards these buyers?
Talk to me in 3 months, I might have a different opinion. But think about this. Two years ago, you could pitch Animal Planet. You could pitch Science Channel. You could pitch TNT. You could pitch Smithsonian Channel. Probably 20 different channels that you could pitch two years ago that you can't pitch now, right? They're either out of business. They're not taking pitches. And I get the economics, right? You have larger media companies losing hundreds of millions of dollars every quarter as we're transitioning into this new model. And I kind of understand the bundling, because it's about, what does a consumer want? A consumer wants value, right? And so there was a great study that came out last year. It said something about Americans, like 40 some percent of Americans don't have more than $400 in their bank account for like a medical emergency, or if their car breaks down or something, right? I just saw something yesterday that credit card debt is the highest it's ever been amongst people, right? And so if that's the case, if the majority of Americans don't have more than $400 in an emergency fund, well, how can we expect them to have 7 different streaming services, right? You just can't, right? And so, and I want to get to your question about how we approach all this. So I feel like the bundling is really an interesting way to try to fight churn, a way to bring value back to consumers. I think consumers, I can tell you from my own personal life, my acquaintances, my friends, my family, people just started dropping things. It's like, I can't. These are the two I watch the most. I'm just going to stick with them. And if I want to watch that football game on Peacock or whatever, I'll hit it. I'll get it. And so we live in this time of convergent. This is a phrase I've just learned, convergent TV, right? The advertisers are all using that phrase now of, you know, wherever it is, right? TikTok, YouTube, cable, streaming, whatever. We're looking at like now this holistic universe, which I think is really interesting. So jumping back to the fact that there are fewer networks to pitch now, I think you do have to be, we're approaching things in a kind of two ways. The days of saying, and for me anyway, the days of saying, again, this was 2 years ago, well, I can only take that show to one place. Let's not spend our resources developing that show. Let's look for shows we can take to 3 or 4 places. That occasionally happens, but the brands now, which is probably a good thing, are becoming more and more kind of distinct and their own kind of way. I'm finding it better to kind of be more bespoke. Like, you know, we have our relationships with some amazing network executives, and we can talk to them about an idea and get their feedback and, oh, great. Okay. That's how we can make that work for you. So it's a bit more interactive with the network executives. Having been a network executive, I can totally sympathize with that. Must make their lives really hard, because, you know, there are fewer networks, but there's the same amount of production companies. And so and many of these network executives are over, the development execs are over more than one network. And, you know, they're probably talking to the same people, same agents and things several times a day. So on one hand, we're trying to be a bit more focused in our development. We have a very strong brand. And so we try to stick to that brand, right? There's a wide aperture to that brand, you know, and I describe our brand, this great brand that Tom Beers founded, right, as, you know, big, bold ideas told in a really, really well-crafted way. Going back to the early days of Deli's Couch, we're just getting ready to do season 20 this summer. Season 20 is going to, like, that show is embodies that brand. Big, bold ideas told in a well-crafted way, right? So how do we bring that brand into the current cultural conversation? So that brings us things like Dan Rather, our Waco series we did for Netflix, a show we do for USA that's, we're in second season, drops May 20th, which was a big hit for them last year, called Race to Survive. Last year was Race to Survive Alaska. This year is Race to Survive New Zealand. How do we bring that same ethos to all those different shows and create this brand? So that's what we try to do, is have that brand at our forefront, talk to our network partners about what they need. And then the second prong of that is, I also know, like, the existential dilemma we all face, right? I can't just think anymore about selling a show to a cable network and living on my 10% production company fee. So we're really investigating new business models for ourselves. And so one thing I could talk about is, we just launched a couple weeks ago a fast channel called Rig TV. And it's all of our content. You know, we're ultimately owned by Fremantle, and Fremantle has a thriving fast channel business. And we launched Rig, and actually we're doing really well. And we're in our second week, and we're doing really, really, really well. And it's a lot of programming that were kind of classic original production shows, Black Gold, Coal Mining, Swords, Life on the Line, Monster Garage. Some of these shows that, in a different time in cable, in the early 2000s, networks were willing to co-pro or share rights and things like that. So those shows are old enough that their rights have all reverted to us. So we thought, well, you know, let's support our brand. You know, we have this big social media presence. We're very active on social media. Let's try to create a new revenue stream on this fast channel. Let's try to create some new revenue streams by doing some YouTube content. So we're looking kind of, we're sort of embracing the idea of convergent TV. And this is our phrase. We try to put our content where people are, not where we want them to be.
For the audience, if you don't know, so FAST is a free ad-supported television. When I think of FAST, I think of Tubi or Pluto. So when you say you guys started your own FAST channel, is that a FAST channel on Tubi or on Pluto? Or is this the original production's FAST channel rigged? Is that living somewhere else?
It's on Roku right now.
It's on Roku. Okay, yeah, I forgot Roku.
And so it's fun. It's interesting for me because it lets me, you know, there was a time when I was a network executive at Discovery Channel, and I'm enjoying kind of running a channel, because that's what we're doing. We're running a channel. We're doing ad sales. We're coming up with stunts for advertisers. We're coming up with theme weeks. And so it's fun to kind of have that different focus. It's very entrepreneurial. It's very exciting. Here's what I think is the most wonderful thing. So when you and I were young Gen Xers, a documentary, or not a nonfiction piece of content, was something you had to go to, like, Angelica Film Center. It was like, you're going to go see a documentary. Oh, aren't you like arty, right? For my son, who's in his 20s, like, it's just as valid of a choice as watching a YouTube video of somebody, a Twitch video, or watching an Academy Award-winning film, right? It's a valid entertainment choice as opposed to a niche piece of content. And I think that's wonderful. And so the more we as the companies that make this shows, the more we can diversify how we do business, where we put our shows, and who we're speaking to, the better it is for all of us in the industry, because we're reaching, right now we're reaching Gen Alpha with our content. We're actually finding on our socials and on our FAST that we're really actually reaching, like, people, younger people than we ever thought we'd reach. We thought we'd tap more into the nostalgia, but, like, on our socials, when we would show clips from these old shows, a lot of the comments would be, where can I watch this show? I wasn't born yet when that show was on. Where can I find this show, right? Because of what this brand is, right?
Yeah, of course.
What those kind of shows that Tom, Craig Piligian, Sally Ann Salzano, all those people who really gave us this industry.
They built the genre.
All those same impulses that were behind those shows still resonate for viewers today who weren't around to see those shows in their heyday. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's any different than the phenomenon that was Suits this past summer on Netflix.
Totally.
Young folks still like the same content that we have delivered for the past 20, 30, 40 years. However, they just don't want to watch it in the same places that we've been making it over the past 40 years. They only want to watch it in the places that they like, which is Netflix or fast channels. They like watching it on Tubi for free, YouTube for free, TikTok for free. They like Netflix because it's cool, or Hulu because it's cool. That's where their friends are watching. They have no idea. I met with a YouTuber who's 24 years old and has 5 million subscribers and had never heard of Extreme Makeover Home Edition that I worked on back in 2011. He had never heard of Extreme Makeover Home Edition. And I was fine with that, Jeff. I was fine. I was not insulted. But that, to me, is the perfect example. Your shows at original productions like Deadliest Catch, Axemen, Ice Road Truckers, the whole, like you said, it's a library, right? As well as the Fremantle shows like American Idol, right? And it goes on and on, right? Price is Right, all the game shows. Yeah. Right. It is a library of incredible content. And yes, the tastes may change slightly, but there's still an audience there. And it's the same as, like, why does Grey's Anatomy after 20 seasons still rank in the top 10 of Hulu and Netflix? And I'm not talking about the new episodes. I'm talking about season one and two, and people are still discovering it because it's a good format. It's a good show. And it's the same for reality. It's the same for unscripted. It's not going to change. If it's a good show, people will find it. And like you said, if you're Gen Alpha or you're Gen Z and you're just looking for something good, there's no reason that you can't find a show that may have, you know, Monster Garage that aired in the early 2000s. It's still good.
Those libraries, Suits, what do you think about, like, Suits, Seinfeld, Friends? During the pandemic, my wife and I, because we were, you know, all at home, I'd finished the day and we rewatched the entire Frasier series and Cheers, like all those shows, because they aren't necessarily like driven by the zeitgeist of that time. They were more like Frasier was just all about relationships, right? Cheers was all about relationships. So they're kind of evergreen. And I feel like, you know, to your point, the shows Deadliest Catch, like for 20 years, it's like man versus nature, right? Axemen, which A&E owns and they have on fast channels. But again, there are these sort of monolithic characters in these monolithic worlds. They kind of are these themes. It's the same thing with Fremantle and some of the game shows and the libraries and things, right? They brought back Password recently, right? I love Password. I love the new version of it, right? I remember playing Password on road trips when I was a kid in the car with my family. I think there are those kind of things that have a cross-generational appeal that we shouldn't resent them for taking up space in viewers' minds, because they're still consuming the hard work that everybody put into those shows. They're still consuming those shows because they're ultimately entertaining. We're trying to find new territory, new places, new ways of telling stories, new kinds of stories to tell, because that's the only way to break out and kind of continue to keep your company afloat, I think. Whatever happens with Paramount, right? Because that was an empire. MTV, Spike, right? Comedy Central. You just kind of remember it, start going, right? Think about all those shows, right? Chappelle, Mind of Mencia, you know, all those great shows that Lew Wallach did when he was, right? Like, you know, they were, it was an empire. And I think it will come back. It will be, right? It's just kind of going through the throes of whatever it's, you know, what is that expression? When the elephants wrestle, the grass gets trampled, right? They're just kind of, they're going through the throes of like a deal that doesn't really concern us. But eventually, wherever that all nets out, what are they going to need? They're going to need shows, right?
They will.
For whatever networks are left, they're going to need shows.
Yeah. It's really interesting you bring up those comedy shows, because like there was a time, and I thought about this past week, or maybe it was last weekend, whenever that Tom Brady roast was on Netflix. And I don't know if you saw it.
It was great.
Amazing. Yeah, it was phenomenal. But I was thinking about when Comedy Central kind of ruled comedy. Chappelle, you mentioned, Key and Peele, when The Daily Show in its heyday with Jon Stewart. And he's back now, but that's really all.
David Carroll.
Yeah. I mean, that's really all that Comedy Central is now, is Jon Stewart kind of came back to save it. But other than that, I don't know even if they have any other original programming, but I was thinking, like, I loved those roasts on Comedy Central, and seeing Tom Brady get roasted live with, like, probably some of the most shocking and profane and just like jokes that I had to go, I had to look around and go, is that okay? Like, and then going, yeah, I guess it's okay. Right. Like, it was just one of those things that I kind of said to myself, and I called a couple of my friends. And I was like, yeah, they just basically ripped comedy away from every, you know, they took over comedy in my mind. Like, and you could argue, well, they already had it with all the comedy specials and everything. But to me, that was kind of the last bastion that Comedy Central had, was, well, they did the roasts. And now it was like Jeff Ross and Kevin Hart.
Jeff Ross was there. Yeah.
It was gone.
Yeah.
It was gone. It was like, forget you guys, forget HBO, forget Comedy Central. That's the old days. Netflix now. We're the kings of comedy. And it just kind of made me sad. Like, I was happy that I got to watch it, but I kind of was like, man, like, everybody kind of gave up. Like, it feels like, to a certain extent, some of those channels that you and I grew up watching.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear. Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
I've given up, and that's what's sad.
I'm going to choose to remain optimistic and say, I hope this is a period that they're going through, because it's interesting. We did a show, speak about working with, like, people you admire. We did a show for Amazon a couple years ago that Reggie Hudlin directed, called Fat Tuesdays, the Era of Hip Hop Comedy. And for people who don't know, there was this amazing gentleman named Guy Tori who started a night in the 90s at the Comedy Store for black comedians called Fat Tuesdays, Fat with a PH. And I mean, it launched so many careers, like so many careers of so many amazing people. And we called it Fat Tuesdays, called the Era of Hip Hop Comedy. And it was so interesting to make that film, to just get the chance to, you know, he's amazing. And Reggie lived that, right? House Party was of that generation, you know, like so fantastic to get a chance. And it's just, he was so steeped in that world and he knew everybody. And we got everybody to come back and be interviewed. And so, like, that was that time leading up to sort of the Comedy Central things and all that stuff. But what I learned in that was, then you have all these new people like DC Young Fly, right? Who became stars on this, right? They became stars on YouTube and Instagram. And so it changed. Like it started off in the clubs, you know, Fat Tuesdays at the Comedy Store becomes the most the night in Hollywood and the biggest stars are coming. And then they get a TV show. And so now you're like, okay, the route for young comics now is Instagram, YouTube, still the comedy clubs, right? And then, but their success is different because they get enough, you know, they may be making a ton of money on Patreon or on YouTube or whatever. So I remain excited because this is, in my career, this has been one of the most difficult periods, right? We thought like the writer strike in the early 2000s was like, oh my God, you know, this is a really difficult period because it's all this attrition, it's, you know, consolidation. I think we're kind of like in a, I like to refer to it as like a bear market correction in our industry, right? We're kind of, what was happening in 21 and 22 wasn't sustainable, right? And so now we've corrected. But I'm hoping and I'm hopeful and excited because we get to figure out what comes next, right? It may take us 5 more years of pain and agony, but eventually we come out on the other side with people being like, okay, this is now what we're providing to our viewers that gives them value. This is what we're providing to our viewers where we are must-see TV, if you will, right? And you know, you can argue till the cows come home if that's Netflix, if that's YouTube, if that's this or that, but right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? YouTube's the number one platform now, right? But we're all headed in this direction and we're all kind of going to get there at some point and figure it out. And then we're gearing up for another time of, I think, flourishing, I think.
I appreciate your optimism. I need your optimism. As an independent producer, it's become, you know, it's even more of a moving target. It's like a speeding target. Like pre-pandemic, it was like you kind of had an idea of like what everybody wanted and who the players were. And then it just, mm-hmm. the chaos started. And that makes sense when the pandemic, you know, during the pandemic, but then it was like all of a sudden a bomb just exploded when the streaming wars started. And then, I mean, like, mm-hmm. I distinctly remember the 1 month that Netflix lost subscribers and it was like all of mm-hmm. a sudden panic ensued and suddenly everyone mm-hmm. realized that making money was important. I think the toughest part in a way is who to trust. And who can you count on? It was like for so long, it was like we could count on that showrunner to give us a call or that production company to give us a call, that network to give us a call. And it's that uncertainty now that exists that those calls aren't coming. Those emails aren't coming because those people are also concerned.
Like we all took hits, you know, everybody took a hit in 2023. We lost shows. We were lucky to sell some shows to replace those shows, but there was not a single production company that didn't have their world rock. And if they tell you they didn't, they're lying. Like everybody was rock globally. And then that just trickles out, right? To showrunners, to DPs, to editors, to people trying to break in, right? And it didn't matter if you were, you know, I was not a believer. And this sounds easy to say now, but like when people were like, oh, well, maybe it'll be like 2007 or 8 and like it'll give a boom again to unscripted. You knew it wasn't. You knew it wasn't, right? Because they had so much stuff already done. So it is, it's like I said, it's the hardest thing is not being able to call that favorite showrunner and say, oh man, we got a new thing we just sold to blah, blah, blah. Like, does that interest you? Oh, you're so busy? Damn it. All right. Well, next one, man. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, or like, and it wasn't that then. 2022?
Yeah.
Good luck finding an editor in 2022.
Oh,
right?
I know.
Like, they were all booked up forever.
I know.
So that is hard because it wasn't this gradual decline where people could kind of make adjustments. It was like we kind of fell off a cliff. I'm already starting to see some buying increase, the number of pitches we're doing. 2023 had the fewest pitches I've probably ever had ever. I think, you know, I'm seeing more pitches, I'm seeing more buying, I'm seeing more nibbles. Someone said a phrase to me at the beginning of 2024, which was survive till 25. And I kind of believe it. Like, I feel like I am, I am starting to see the little green shoots of, like, you know, possibilities start to, like, creep up from underneath the cold. Ooh, look at me extend this metaphor. The cold, wintry frost of 2023. Ooh. Like, I do feel like, I know, right? That was good. I do feel like it has to. At the end of the day, people want content. And to your point earlier, I do think if I were independent, I would be looking for ways to exploit TikTok, YouTube, you know, Patreon. I would just take the bull by the horns, and you can cut a film on your computer now. You know what I mean? Yep. We have democratized the tools. And I always like to say it's not so much the tool as it is the carpenter. If you're a really talented person, you can make a really compelling film with your phone and a computer, right? It might only be 10 minutes, but, like, you can make some really, really compelling stuff.
I love it. Look, everybody needs to watch Rather. I'm biased because I started in news. So for me, it was like a great kind of look back at some of the great, you know, historical moments where, you know, Dan Rather as a newsman really kind of brought things to life. Everybody needs to watch it. Jeff, thank you for doing No Script, No Problem.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks again to Jeff Hassler. Next up, we're talking sports with journalist Emily Bix. She covers the Kansas City Chiefs, Seattle Seahawks, and Buffalo Bills for Heavy Sports. We get into the controversy surrounding Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker, Caitlin Clark's tough start in the WNBA, and the NFL's Christmas Day takeover on Netflix. A reminder, we did this interview on Friday, May 17th, so obviously there's been a lot going on in sports since then. Caitlin Clark played her third game in the NBA and had 22 points, much better than her first two games, which had occurred when we spoke on Friday. Enjoy the interview, folks.
Welcome back to No Script, No Problem, Emily Bix.
Hi.
I have a question for you. Have you ever been arrested and then gone and hit a 5-under 66 on the golf course?
I'm going to say no to both.
No to both. Never been arrested. Okay, well, that the first one, good. Yeah.
My PGA tournament, you know, it never happened for me. So
Scottie Scheffler, world number one player in the PGA, had a very unique day on Friday. You know, we're recording this on Friday, May 17th, and PGA tournament underway. Scottie Scheffler gets a arrested on his way to the course in Louisville, Kentucky. The police officer ends up with abrasions, I believe is what they're calling it, in the hospital. He goes, spends a few hours in the pokey, and then still makes it for tea time and shoots, you know, was it 6 birdies?
First of all, we're sleeping on, like, the actual news of the whole thing is that a man died. Like, a worker of a vendor got hit by a shuttle bus, which is why there was a police presence outside directing traffic. So from what I read, it seems like Scheffler thought it was just like the average security and that he could go around, you know, because he's competing in the tournament. And they were like, no, because we have a scene here, and things, like, got completely out of control. So I feel bad that, like, I feel like the fact that a guy died is really getting buried in this whole thing. But, you know, there's the video that Jeff Darlington posts, which is when Scheffler was already arrested and walking. And what we're missing, right, is the police officer getting dragged when he sustained his injuries and all of that.
Okay, so problems, yes, for Scottie Scheffler, at least off the golf course, not on. But there are some problems. You are a reporter who covers the Kansas City Chiefs, and it's you know, mm-hmm. they're doing great on the field when they're playing football. We are in the off season, and some rough waters for the Kansas City Chiefs. Even, you know, with their kicker Harrison Butker.
Oh my gosh, it is complicated. It is a lot. So Butker gave a graduation speech at Benedictine College, which is a small Catholic school in Kansas. He used his wife as an example urging women to embrace their true vocation, which is that of a homemaker. So, you know, men like him can succeed. There is a petition with over 100,000 signatures wanting him to be dismissed from the team. I don't think that's going to happen. Also, the family who owns the Chiefs, the Hunt family, is a devout Christian family. They share the exact same values as Butker. So it's disappointing to see how many people have this antiquated view of women's roles in 2024, and the massive amount of support he's getting. That, you know, his jersey sales completely spiked, and it's like, you know, but he can say whatever he wants, right? It's free speech. But then you also have to deal with the blowback. You can't say you can't criticize him. Like, yes, you can. You can also agree with him. We can debate about this. You know what I'm saying? It's blown up even more in a way because he had to mention my teammate's girlfriend and mention a line from her song Bejeweled, which is actually a proverb from like back in the 5th century, of familiarity breeds contempt. It is interesting for the Chiefs to be owned by the Hunts, right? It is very devout Christians, and then have one of their star players dating Taylor Swift, who is a symbol of like female empowerment. So there's like a big clash of the Chief Kingdom fan base. I don't see it going away super soon. This thing is going to have legs. It's going to be a major distraction throughout the year.
I believe we should get rid of these commencement speeches. Like, all it is asking for trouble. You know, like, it's completely ridiculous. Like, you're basically giving people a platform to get up there and say something controversial. Regardless,
or you could go up there and give like an inspiring speech. Like, oh my God, at my college graduation, I got it was great. It was super fun. You could just inspire them to like keep going with their careers and have fun and make the best of it. Life is hard. You know, it's not that difficult.
I had George Will.
You don't have to go up there and preach your religious beliefs. You don't have to impart that on all these kids sitting there. No one does. Future, like, ahead of them.
To use the quote unquote, tell these folks that young women that they have been told diabolical lies, quote unquote, about joining the workforce. These are people about to graduate. To me, it is just literally so insidious to pick this particular audience. Like, you want to have a podcast, you know, and go and spew this type of belief, that's fine. But you're literally poisoning that moment of like youthful exuberation, that college graduation, high school graduation. Those are the naive moments where you're like, oh my God, I can still accomplish everything, you know? And then to have somebody sit there and take those moments and go, no, don't do anything. No, stay in this lane. Right. I'm going to take the whole religious aspect out of it, but just to be told this specifically, this one group of young women, you don't go and achieve what you want. Stay in your lane. Get back, you know, to the 1950s.
He also didn't just target women in his speech. It was the LGBTQ community. It was IVF. Obviously, President Biden. And he brought up COVID, and there was a lot. There was an agenda there. And yes, he was speaking to a Catholic college, but the Sisters of the Benedictine put out a statement too, denouncing his speech, being like, yeah, no, that's not it. Like, that's not what we're preaching at our school. We want inclusivity. His words were divisive. The NFL put out a statement being like, nope, those are not our views either. You also see a ton of people supporting him and being like, I share those views too. So, and it's hard. I don't think you're going to change either side's view. He's going to get booed. He's going to get cheered. He is now going to be a symbol for conservatives on the football field. And there's a lot of whataboutisms here, especially like from conservatives being like, where was this outrage with Rashi Rice? And it's like, that is a completely different situation. Why didn't you write about that? And it's like, I wrote multiple articles about Rashi Rice. Like, that situation, he's facing 8 felony charges, right? it's still going through the process. The thing is that it's not a question of if he's going to get suspended, it's when and how many games. So he is going to get punished for the mistakes he made. The other thing people are comparing it to is Colin Kaepernick, which is where you had this same conservative people being like, shut up, this is offensive, you shouldn't be playing, get off the field. And now when they're seeing like far left people say, get Butker off the field, I don't want to see that person playing, they're like, oh, you're a snowflake. And it's like, well, Kaepernick was also speaking up for a marginalized community, right? Butker is telling this marginalized community, like, Pride Month is evil and it just women, you know, get your ass back in the kitchen. So now they have two huge distractions. They have Rice's pending suspension, and then they have Butker, who is now this incredibly controversial figure.
It will be in
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/westwoodone.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear. Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
Interesting the first time he runs out onto the field. That is for sure. You mentioned the Chiefs' schedule. And as it turns out, this past week, the NFL and Netflix are teaming up. Netflix will get two NFL games on Christmas Day. Netflix notoriously has said in the past they do not want to do live sports. And sure enough, they are. So two games on Christmas Day, and one of them is the Chiefs and the Steelers. The other game will be the Ravens and the Texans. And if you check your calendar, folks, this year, that is on a Wednesday, Christmas Day on a Wednesday. Emily, yeah. Are you excited for the Chiefs and the Steelers right in the middle of the week, just like the players love it? Wednesday, December 25th.
Oh my gosh. You know, I think any other person that has to work during this game, players, staff, anyone, their fingers were crossed. Like, please don't be me on Christmas. Please don't be me. That the viewership last year, Christmas game, right, was like through the roof. Even though the NFL said with Christmas being on a Wednesday, like, we're not going to mess with that. Why? Because how are you going to fix the schedule? It's late in the season. The team's playing on Christmas on a Wednesday. Their previous week's game will be on a Saturday. So to have that kind of back-to-back games that late in the season is going to be so difficult on these players and their bodies. I don't get to spend the holiday with my family aside, speaking from the player's point of view, right? That's grueling. That is a grueling thing to do in late December, already with the longer NFL season. So it's tough. I can't imagine a ton of people are thrilled about it.
They have got to be thrilled that they are the first major sports league to be getting a live game on Netflix. Like, this is a huge deal. The biggest streaming platform in the world right now is broadcasting an NFL game. This is a huge deal. And to do it on Christmas for Roger Goodell, for the NFL, they are high-fiving, you know?
Does Netflix have any other live games?
No.
Are they doing other?
No, they've done live events. They did a golf event, remember, just like a little, you know, kind of like a little fun event. And they did a tennis event, you know, just like a one-day thing, not like a real tournament or anything like that, nothing official. And they're doing that fight with one of the Paul brothers and Mike Tyson, but nothing official, nothing that's like a regular season or a playoff game. This is it. This will be the first time.
On top of the two Christmas games and the Black Friday game and the Thanksgiving games, there's also more international games than ever this season. So adding on top of that travel, it's grueling. Staying healthy is going to be hard. I'm a little worried that for Netflix's first big NFL game, it's a major Christmas game. Because remember when Amazon Prime's first Thursday night football game, like production-wise, like camera-wise, we were missing so many plays. The camera was like in the wrong spot. Like, it's hard to know how to film and like it's such an insane production to do. So for that to be the first game is wild.
Okay. And let's shift gears.
Yeah.
Talk a little hoops. All right. WNBA season.
All right.
Yeah. WNBA season underway. The long-awaited debut in the WNBA of the one and only Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever were 0-2 after the first two games. So like I said, it is May 17th. Okay, so we're two games in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, record-setting attendance for the first game in Indiana. Great ratings for the first game. Her debut on TV. But the scoreboard is not on fire.
I didn't expect her to come out the gate scoring, you know, doing triple doubles. I just didn't. I think it's wild that you get drafted and then you are with your new team playing in games a month later. Like, that doesn't happen in the NBA, the NFL. You have time to like gel with your team and figure it out. What I think is incredible is that, I mean, part of her, the phenomenon that is Caitlin Clark, is that people are tuning in. Like, they had more viewers watching this WNBA game than the NHL playoff game happening at the same time. There was more viewers on ESPN2 than ESPN. And that is her, and it is her star power. And I tuned in for game two. It didn't stop me. I was like, let's go. It's like, now we're like rooting for her to like find her stride, right? Because we know the talent is there. Also, you know, when you're the number one overall pick, you're not going to the best team. Like, it's not like she – this is totally normal. I know you can speak on NBA. You have the stats for that. But, like, I'm thinking back to, like, Peyton Manning's rookie season, right? 25 interceptions. He went 3-13. Like, you could tell the talent was there. You could tell this guy was, like, going to be special. But, man, that did not go well. I'm not worried about her at all. I'm excited to like see her grow and improve and watch it go. And I think her fans, because there's a lot of them, are going to see it too.
We both talked about this before we came on. Diana Taurasi, you know, the legend, WNBA, still in the game, you know, had said prior to the season starting, quote, it's going to take time for Caitlin Clark. She will need time to adjust to the physicality and pace. And that is evident. Like, and a lot of people were up in arms that Diana Taurasi, you know, was saying something controversial, but it's obvious she was right. Like, dude, you're now stepping up to the next level, the elite, the most elite players in the world. And so it's okay. Like, I don't know. No one should panic. She's like you said, she's going to be fine. This is an adjustment period. You go from playing one of the top programs in college basketball to the worst team in the WNBA. and it's going to take time.
And she's handling it with so much grace and like humility. I think the weight that is on her shoulders is absurd. I think that is crazy. And she handles it like the day before, the morning of her debut, they were like, how did you sleep last night? And she's like, yeah, I'm good. And I was just like, that's amazing. That is amazing, because knowing how many eyes are on you and how many people are like seriously rooting for you to fail, it's a lot. And I think she's doing great. And I don't know, I would crumble under that pressure.
I just hope that people don't like have this reaction if she has a rough go of it early on in the season, and that people kind of, and that this level of interest that dissipates. You know, I hope that doesn't happen, because right now you do have this interest and you've got eyeballs, and I hope that doesn't go away just mm-hmm. because if she starts to struggle. Because if you watched any of the highlights, or if you watched the game against the Liberty, I mean, Brianna Stewart is freaking phenomenal. And, you know, Asia Wilson, like, there's so much talent in the league.
This rookie class is like, you know, you got Angel Reese, you got Cameron Brink, and like, there's so many more like, oh, I can't wait to see that person play. Women that just entered, as you said, to elevate it even more. It's really exciting. I've never watched this much WNBA basketball. Like sat down and was like, no, this is like must-see TV. But I'm so in it now. I am a new fan, you know?
All right. Well, thank you for joining No Script, No Problem. And I am most certainly going to have you back again.
Thank you. It was great.
Okay, as you probably know by now, Scottie Scheffler finished the PGA Championship tied for eighth, as Xander Schauffele took home the title. Meanwhile, Caitlin Clark dropped 22 points in her third game and 17 in game number four, despite going down briefly with an ankle injury. The Fever remained winless at 0-4. That's going to do it for another episode of No Script, No Problem. Thanks to Jeff Hassler and Emily Bix for two great interviews. Please remember to like, subscribe, and download all episodes of the show. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and Bleav.com. Please, if you got any questions, send them over to me at noscriptnoproblempodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Berkowitz for No Script, No Problem.
My name is Nicole Kidman, and I've wanted to do a rom-com for so long, and along came A Family Affair. It's a great romantic comedy, and it's laugh out loud. If you feel like, I just need to curl up and watch something that feels very comforting, it's the Netflix experience. There's laughter and there's joy. That's A Family Affair.
A Family Affair, starring Nicole Kidman, Zac Efron, and Joey King. Directed by Richard LeGravenaise. Rated PG-13. Sexual content, partial nudity, and some strong language. Only on Netflix, June 28th.
She said, get out the chat room and clean my
Glad Stretch, feeling fine, so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.